Thank you, Mr. Haney. A number of years ago, a woman in the church asked me if she could counsel about her marriage. Of course, we agreed to do so. One of the saddest things that she said is that she didn't know any of her friends who had a happy marriage. Now, it's not that all of her friends had miserable marriages, but as she communicated the troubles in her marriage with her friends, she clearly projected her discontent and unhappiness into her friends' responses and concluded that nobody has a happy marriage. Now, I happen to have known many of her friends and their marriages, and I knew the state of their marriages and their families. And of course, while none were perfect, many of them were quite happy and had delightful marriages and families. Sadly, this woman's marriage ended in divorce and in her leaving the church. I think it would be safe to say that this woman and her husband never really developed true intimacy in their marriage. And when you think about marriage, isn't this what we all desire? An intimate marriage where we feel safe and secure and close, a special closeness that's not shared with any other human being. Today, during the course of the sermon, today is, of course, Christian Leadership Training Class is also on the subject of marriage, so I thought it'd be fitting to address this in the sermon as well. But during the course of the sermon today, I'd like to help your marriage by discussing the top 10 intimacy needs in marriage. Now, if you're already married, our goal is to enhance that marriage, make it better by either making you aware of or reminding you of the factors of intimacy so that your marriage can develop greater closeness than it may have today, closer to your spouse. If you're not yet married, we would hope that this might help you prepare for marriage by being made aware of the factors of closeness or intimacy so your marriage can start off on the right foot. And if you are post-marriage, we hope this can also be a learning situation to help you in the case that a marriage might be in your future, or to help others with their marriages, whether today or off into the future when you work with couples in the world tomorrow. So what are the top 10 intimacy needs? Now, we put these in alphabetical order. This is not necessarily in importance order, but at least in alphabetical order to help us sort through them. The first that we'll discuss today is acceptance. Now, when we talk about intimacy, you may be thinking sex. Well, sex is a part of things. But when these needs are filled, sex finds its place, and we can talk about that at another time. We'll talk about acceptance to begin with. How do you define acceptance? You see, to be truly close to your mate, you have to feel accepted by them. So if I'm going to work on accepting my mate, here's how we might define it. Deliberate and ready reception with a favorable, positive response. We've told our teens at camp that one of the most delightful things you can do for another human being is accept them. Well, that doesn't mean you tolerate sin. You accept them until they feel accepted. Rarely will you have an opportunity to work with them on their sins and help them to change. So I'll read that again. Deliberate and ready reception with a favorable, positive response. Turn with me to Romans chapter 15, beginning in verse 7. You'll find that most of the scriptures that we'll go over in the sermon this afternoon really have to do with Christianity as a whole. And yet, we've often heard the phrase, Christianity begins at home. It's where we start. One wise sage that taught me a lot about marriage said it's important to be a Christian in the home rather than a heathen to your honey. And it's certainly true. If we can apply the scriptures regarding Christianity in our marriage, we'll find that God will help us develop a closeness to our spouse unlike any we've had before. Romans chapter 15 and verse 7. Notice what's stated here. Romans 15 verse 7. Therefore, receive one another, just as Christ also received us to the glory of God. Now, if you look up that word receive in a Greek thesaurus or a Greek dictionary, you'll find that it has some interesting meanings. It means to receive. And then it says this, to grant one access to one's heart. To grant one access to one's heart. So when we talk about accepting another, we're talking about granting them access to our own heart. We're opening our heart to them. The rest of that definition is to take into friendship and intercourse. In other words, social intercourse, talking, spending time, acceptance. It is vital for a happy marriage that a husband feels accepted by his wife. And it's vital that a wife feel accepted by her husband. That they each grant each other access into each other's heart. And they are friends. Turn with me over to Philemon. Philemon is sometimes a challenging book to find. It's right around Hebrews somewhere. No, right before the book of Hebrews, if you have trouble finding it. It's only a one or two page book, depending on the size of print in your Bible. So it's right before the book of Hebrews. Philemon has only one chapter, but verses 10 through 14, I'd like to read to you. Here Paul is writing Philemon about another man, a slave, Onesimus. And Paul had come to be very close to Onesimus and found that Onesimus was an outstanding servant and worker. And while he was being sent back to Philemon at this point, Paul had some special requests. And I think as you read this, we sense this. If we're going to have a happy marriage, husbands and wives must feel that their hearts are open to their spouse, that there's this acceptance, that even when I do stupid things, even when I might do thoughtless things, my spouse accepts me. Philemon in verse 10. I appeal to you, Paul says, he's writing to Philemon, I appeal to you for my son Onesimus, whom I have begotten while in my chains. What is he saying? He said, since I've been in prison, we have become so close. He's like a son to me. And again, in a right family relationship, a father opens his heart to his sons. And sons open their heart to their father. There's this special closeness between fathers and sons, and between mothers and daughters, and mothers and sons, and mothers and daughters. It's a family relationship. Verse 11, who once was unprofitable to you, didn't have much use for him. He wasn't in the right attitude possibly at the time, but now is profitable to you and to me. It seems that Onesimus was a runaway slave. And so there were some problems and issues there. But as he and Paul worked together and as he served Paul, this closeness developed, this acceptance of one another. Verse 12, I'm sending him back to you, therefore receive him. Again, grant access to your heart. That's the word receive. Open your heart to Him. For there to be true acceptance, there has to be an openness of heart. Receive Him. That is, my own heart. Whom I wish to keep with me, that on your behalf He might minister to me in my chains for the gospel. In other words, I would like to have kept Him, but I'm sending Him back to you. But without your consent, I wanted to do nothing, that your good deed might not be by compulsion, but as it were voluntarily. Paul's saying, I could have kept Him, but I want you to give Him voluntarily. So you ask yourself with your marriage, is there an openness of heart? Does my spouse truly know that I accept them? New English translation. Let me read that first, verse 12. When Paul says in the New King James here, I'm sending him back, therefore receive him, that is my own heart. New English translation says it this way, I have sent him who is my very heart back to you. That's the same word that Paul used in Romans when he said, receive one another. Open your heart. You don't get the sense of hardness toward the spouse, of anger toward the spouse, of this angst between spouses at this point. New International Version says it this way in verse 12, I am sending him who is my very heart back to you. Brethren, in our marriages, we must accept our spouse rather than stand back and wag the finger or judge. We have to start with acceptance. When our spouse knows they are accepted, then we can begin to work on the things that irritate us, but not until that time. So does your wife or does your husband deeply feel this acceptance from you? Or do they more often feel rejection and disapproval? Good questions to ask. Let's go on to a second of the top 10 intimacy needs. Again, in alphabetical order. The second one is affection. Affection. It is true, marriages should be filled with affection. Let me define one way of looking at affection. It's this: to communicate care and closeness through physical touch. Now, obviously, this can be done emotionally as well, but in marriage, it can be expressed physically also. Let's turn to the Song of Solomon. Anytime we discuss the issue of intimacy, you would think we'd end up at some point in the Song of Solomon. Because the Song of Solomon is this beautiful, almost poem-like book that talks about a relationship between a man and a woman, a husband and a wife, this pure relationship that seems to be between Solomon and maybe his very first wife, or maybe the wife he finally settled on. It seems to be an allegory of Christ and the church as well. A fascinating study of the book. We won't take the time to do that, but look in the Song of Solomon, right after the book of Ecclesiastes, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Solomon. Song of Solomon, chapter 1, in verses 1 through 4. Do you get the sense of affection here? That this husband and wife really do like each other? In fact, they deeply love one another. The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's in verse 1. Then the assumption is that the Shulamite, the woman, speaks now in the next several verses, at least 2, 3, and 4. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. How many songs have been written with those lyrics? Sweeter than wine. There's this delight of being together because there's an affection there. Your love is better than wine. Because of the fragrance of your good ointments, your name is ointment poured forth. When I hear your name, it's like pouring out perfume. Ah, that's just such a relief, such a sweet scent. Therefore, the virgins love you. No wonder. Draw me away, she says, take me away. There's a modern version of that a few years back. There's a song, Cowboy, Take Me Away. This woman's singing, just I'm yours. There's this affection, this closeness that's there. Turn over to chapter 4. Now, the Song of Solomon gets pretty graphic. We won't probably read the most graphic of portions here. This is a family sermon after all. But you sense this, there's true affection here. It's not sex, it's affection. Now, sex is a part of affection and vice versa, but there's this, I like this person. There's a warmth and a closeness here. Chapter 4 in verse 9. You, he says, now this is apparently the man speaking, you have ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse. You have ravished my heart with one look of your eyes, with one link of your necklace. How fair is your love, my sister, my spouse. How much better than wine is your love and the scent of your perfumes than all spices. Your lips, O my spouse, drip as honeycomb. Honey and milk are under your tongue, and the fragrance of your garments is like the fragrance of Lebanon. You sense this closeness, this warmth, this affection that's communicated through physical touch, through being together. Oh, not again, not sex, but touch, togetherness, closeness, this affection. Husbands and wives need to feel this affection. If you turn to Romans chapter 16, there's another interesting verse. In fact, it's quite a few times in the New Testament. It was part of the culture of the day. It is not necessarily quite the same with regard to the culture today in America. If you travel to other nations, in the West, certainly, France or the Netherlands or all kinds of different countries. We won't take the time to go through all of those, but there is much more of what's described here than there is in our culture. Romans 16, notice verse 16. Greet one another with a holy kiss. A holy kiss. It's a non-sexual kiss. It's a kiss of affection. It's the warmth of the hug and the kiss on the cheeks that other cultures tend to have as a part of their culture. So you see this warmth. Does our spouse often receive non-sexual kisses? I hope she does. I hope he does. Hope that's a part of your routine, because that shows there's some deep affection here. Now, again, I remember a situation many, many years ago when I was very new in the ministry about a man in the church we had to talk with, because he's kissing every woman in the church. And his point was, well, I'm just giving them the holy kiss. And we said, stop giving them that kiss, because it's a little bit unusual. If I go around kissing every woman in the church, oh, yeah, it's just on the cheek, but wait a second. In our culture, something's just, you know, he wasn't a Latin person coming here or French, just an American who's just a little bit over the edge here. So not appropriate in that circumstance, as you could guess. But again, this is the kind of closeness that wouldn't every marriage want that kind of togetherness. There's a sharing here that just is done between husband and wife that's not for others. A third, let's go on to a third. I'm trying to time this so that we get all of them in by the time we finish about four-ish. Third intimacy need in marriage is appreciation. Appreciation. How would you define appreciation? Does your spouse feel appreciated? Do they know that you are thankful for them and what they do? Appreciation might be defined this way: to communicate with words and feelings a personal gratefulness for another. A personal gratefulness for another. So does your husband know that you are grateful for him? Does your wife know that you are grateful for her? Now, many times we might think, well, of course they know that. A husband might think, well, I bring home the paycheck every week, don't I? Surely this woman knows I appreciate her. Well, when's the last time we told her? Notice 1 Corinthians chapter 11. We're at the end of Romans there, just a few pages over to 1 Corinthians 11. In verse 2. Now again, here's Paul showing appreciation to the Corinthians. A few chapters earlier, he was kind of smacking them upside the head and saying, what are you doing? In fact, he has to, in this chapter, kind of smack them upside the head as well and say, you folks are just not approaching the Passover correctly at all. But he says this in verse 2. He wants to have this balance in this situation as their pastor, in essence, or maybe as their regional pastor. He has to correct them, and yet he has to show them how much he appreciates them and loves them as well. In verse 2, he says, now I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the traditions just as I delivered them to you. I praise you. You're doing a great job. So, ladies, when's the last time you told your husband, you're doing a great job as a provider? Thank you. Thank you for getting up every day, going out, doing the job, fighting the dragon, bringing home the bacon, beef bacon, so that we can eat. Thank you for doing that. Fellas, when's the last time you came home and told your wife, maybe this morning, sweetheart, thanks for ironing my shirt for the Sabbath. Thanks for doing that. Really appreciate that. Thanks for learning about how to make our family healthy meals so that we can stay as healthy and strong as we possibly can. Thank you for the things you do to maintain the household. I may have told the story before, but I'll mention this because it's a close family story. After my father died, my mother and I were chatting and one day, and she said, you know, I really had to repent. This is like a week after Dad died. I said, well, Mom, why? what are you talking about? Well, I always wanted to die first so your father would just recognize how much I do for him. And she said, now I realize, after only a week, how much he did for me that I didn't appreciate. So I really had to repent about that. So, again, after 65 years of marriage, they were saying we still didn't appreciate probably each other as much as we should have. Notice over in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. 2 Corinthians chapter 9. In verses 1 and 2. Again, Paul comes back in this next letter congratulating, thanking, appreciating the Corinthians. Good lesson for us with regard to our spouses. The closest Christian to us is the one who lives in our home, or at least the closest person to us, even if they're not a part of the church. 2 Corinthians 9, verses 1 and 2. Now, concerning the ministering to the saints, it's superfluous that for me to write to you. In other words, it seems unnecessary that I even write to you about this. For I know your willingness, about which I boast of you to the Macedonians, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal has stirred up the majority. Now, we could go on from there, but the bottom line is Paul is simply saying, I know you people. You're great. When it comes to taking care of others and providing this offering that he's going to be collecting to send down to Judea to the people who are going through a famine, he said, I know you. So when's the last time we told our spouse that we know them and what they do, such good things that they do, how much we appreciate their diligence to God, how much we appreciate their thoughtfulness toward the family and toward others? how much we appreciate their willingness to care for those who have needs and step outside of our own family to care for others. Very important. It's a need in our families. Notice over in 1 Timothy chapter 1. 1 Timothy chapter 1. In verse 2. 1 Timothy 1 in verse 2. Paul here likewise is conveying important information to Timothy. He says this, to Timothy. Now Paul could have stopped there, right? Timothy, this letter's for you. But what does he say? In this small phrase, Timothy is boosted. He's lifted. To Timothy, a true son in the faith. A true son in the faith. He could have just said, hey, Tim, here's some stuff you need to take care of. But he's saying a true son. Notice over in 2 Timothy, a few pages later. 2 Timothy chapter 1 says it again, a little bit differently. What is he doing? He's showing appreciation. Yes, Timothy had some things that needed to change. Timothy needed to do some things a little differently. Timothy needed encouragement and building up and some correction, without a doubt. But Timothy very clearly knew that Paul appreciated him, and he told him so. 2 Timothy 1 in verse 2. To Timothy, a beloved son. So not just a son of the faith, a true son of the faith. Now it's a beloved son. I really love you, Timothy. Nice work. Continues on in verse 2. Grace, mercy, and peace from God the Father and Jesus Christ our Lord. I thank God, whom I serve with a pure conscience, as my forefathers did without ceasing. I remember you in my prayers night and day. Is that an affirmation? Is that an appreciation? I remember you in my prayers night and day, greatly desiring to see you, being mindful of your tears, that I may be filled with joy. Boy, did he have to write these things? No. Do husbands need to say these things to their wives? Absolutely. Do wives need to say these things to their husbands? Yes. These things do not happen by osmosis. Husbands and wives are not mind readers. They need to hear these things. They need to see these things written in the same way Paul would have written it here. Greatly desiring to see you. Verse 5. When I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you. Nice work, Timothy. I appreciate what you're doing. The genuine faith that is in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded it is in you also. I see that in you. Paul expressing his appreciation. So we can look at our marriage and ask ourselves, do I show my spouse the proper appreciation to help them to continue to do good, to feel appreciated, and to know that we truly do love them as a result? That draws us closer. Let's go on to the next one, number 4, or letter D if you're going A, B, C, D. Approval. Approval. Now you're saying, well, some of these are kind of related to each other, and that's true. But it's important that we delineate them and spend a little bit of time on each. Approval is this, expressed commendation. Isn't that the same as appreciation? Well, somewhat. Expressed commendation, to think and speak well of. Now I could ask the fellas, do you know when your wife is not approving of what you've done or said or thought? Everybody chuckles when we say that. Like, no, it's not obvious at all. I would never guess. I mean, you know immediately when there's that whoa, there's a wall here. And it's like, did I say something? Did I not say something? Did I do something? Did I not do something? It becomes pretty clear. So to think well of and speak well of, and sometimes those walls there, we have to deal with those because there are issues that need to be taken care of. Turn with me to Romans chapter 14. But does our spouse overall know that we approve of them? I hope so. Romans chapter 14 and verse 18. I'll read this to you in the New Living Translation. If you serve Christ with this attitude, New King James says, for he who serves Christ in these things, if you serve Christ with this attitude, you will please God and others will approve of you too. Others will approve of you too. Approval is an essential need in regards to intimacy. We have to feel that our spouse really does approve of us. That's not to say we don't make mistakes and don't need to change things and improve and then do some things better without a doubt. But they need the sense that we approve of them and each other. Song of Solomon chapter 5. We'll go back there for a few moments. Song of Solomon chapter 5. Beginning in verse 10, I'll give you a moment to find it. I would suggest this. It's important to speak well of our spouse, not just to them, but to speak well of our spouse in public to others. And it's even more important that they hear when we do that. Now, there's something very, I wouldn't say magical, but I think there's something very spiritual that when one woman tells another woman about how wonderful her husband is, that's an automatic buildup for her husband, even though he doesn't hear it. But if he hears it, it's that much more of a buildup. Because when I speak positively of my wife to you, what does that generate within me? Thoughts of approval and kindness and love and closeness. And if she hears it, all the better. If she doesn't, it's still a building up. Notice what's said here. Song of Solomon 5 in verse 10. Again, what we understand here is the woman speaking. My beloved is white and ruddy. So apparently that was quite a compliment. This guy is pale as can be, but he's got these rosy cheeks. Like, oh, boy, in that culture, that was tall, white, and handsome, you know. Chief among 10,000. Again, very complimentary, clearly approving of him. His head is like the finest gold. His locks are wavy. Yeah, I would say that. Black as a raven. His eyes are like doves by the rivers of waters, washed in milk and fitly set. Now, ladies, if you'd like to try this some evening, just get this out and read this to your spouse. It may not quite have the same effect that it did in this culture. Verse 13, his cheeks are like a bed of spices, banks of scented herbs. His lips are lilies, dripping liquid myrrh. Okay, it's getting a little soupy here, but you see the point. Clearly she approves of him. And we could read many other sections as well that he says very similar things about her. So it's important to speak well of our spouse in public to others. There's something spiritual about that. It does spiritual things for our marriage. Approving of our spouse in front of others is very powerful. It's very powerful. It is not wise to assume that our spouse somehow automatically knows that we approve of them. It's important that they hear it. It's important that we say it. Don't assume that they know it. And even if they do know it, hearing it solidifies it. It concretes it. It gives support. Because marriages, brethren, are always under attack. They're always under attack. And the more strength that we can give to our marriage through these spiritual events, the better it will be, the stronger it will be. Let's go on to number five. Number five is another A word, attention. Attention. For us to be really close in marriage, have the kind of intimacy we really desire, we must pay attention to each other. Give attention. Show attention. One way to define attention in this circumstance is this: to take thought of another and convey appropriate interest and support. To enter into another's world. To enter into another's world. Now, the opposite of this is probably quite an old illustration, where a woman comes into the living room and is going to talk to her husband, and he's holding up the newspaper. That shows how old an illustration this is. It's back when people actually read newspapers. You know, those big pages with print on them that kind of... Just a question. How many in this audience still get a daily newspaper at home? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's interesting. So I do have to explain that. Newspaper is a big sheet of paper. Sometimes it has pictures in it. But here's the man sitting reading the newspaper, and his wife comes in and has something important to tell him, and she says, yeah, and he goes, never lowers the paper. Of course, today, it's, I'm surfing the internet, and she comes in and says, oh yeah, right, sweetheart, and we're fixed. We happen to go to this little FitWorks, I hope they're not listening in, go to a little FitWorks exercise place to try to stay healthy, do what we can for ourselves, and the lady who works the desk is a nice person, I suppose, but I mean literally, I don't know that she's ever looked up, because you have to go in and you have to do your little card, and it goes beep. Enjoy your workout. The computer talks to you. Enjoy your workout. Oh yeah, I'm going to enjoy this. It's like killing myself. Let me nail my hand to the floor, see if that feels any better. But the poor woman, I mean, she is glued to the computer. And just on Friday when we're leaving, and we always say, have a nice day, or take care, or see you next time. And she did not remove her eyes from the computer. Said, have a good workout. Oh, I mean, goodbye. So that made me feel just warm and fuzzy everywhere. We're close to this woman. I mean, she's a pal to us. And again, I'm not blaming her. If I had to sit in front of that desk all day long, I'd probably be glued to the internet as well. Just sit there and hello, hello, hello. I don't know what else they do. But the point is, do we pay attention to our spouse? When they have concerns, when they have issues, can we sit? Can we listen? Can we be attentive in that sense? Notice 1 Corinthians chapter 12. 1 Corinthians 12 talks about the parts of the body and this sensitivity between the parts of the body. And of course, Paul is writing this regarding the parts of the church and how we need, you know, we just got through 1 Corinthians 11 about the Passover, and here people are eating meal at the Passover and they're getting drunk, they're having this big feast, and the people sitting right next to them have virtually nothing to eat, and they don't even seem to notice. They pay no attention to the fact that the people right next to them have nothing to eat. And they're just gorging themselves and drinking themselves half drunk before the Passover. So Paul comes into chapter 12 and said, do you realize what you're doing? I mean, you're neglecting the body of Christ. And then he gives this great analogy of the church is like a body. Well, who's the closest part of your body? It's your spouse. You're to be one flesh. This is the two of you together. So if this applies in the church, how much more does it apply in our families, in our marriages? 1 Corinthians 12, verse 24. But our presentable parts have no need, but God composed the body, having given greater honor to that part which lacks it. Talking about the reproductive organs, verse 25. That there should be no schism in the body. We ask that, do we have a schism in our body, in our family, in our marriage? That there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another. You see, attention shows that we care. Verse 26. And if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. Or if one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. Is that what it's like in our marriage? Do we pay attention to what they wear, to how they look, to what they like, to what they don't like, to what makes them happy? Do we pay attention to what makes them sad? Could we list our spouse's favorite three or four meals? Could we do that? Well, if we can't, maybe we haven't been paying attention. Or maybe their culinary diet is so expansive that they'll eat anything at any time. I tease with my sweetheart. She loves to try new recipes. So she'll always ask me at the end of the meal somewhere, we'll talk, well, is this a keeper? Like, should I make this one again? And recently I told her, it doesn't really matter because you never make the same thing twice anyway. You're always trying something new, and I love that. It's not a problem. But it's so funny because it ends up in the book, but then something else is cooked in it the next time around. It's wonderful. So if you want variety, come to my house. You'll have lots of variety that way. It's wonderful. So the point is, do we pay attention? Husbands, in the throes of making a living and taking care of all of our responsibilities, it can be challenging to pay attention to our wives and what they need, how they're feeling, what they're thinking, what's going on in their lives. And wives, in the throes of having and caring for and raising children, can be challenging to pay attention to our husbands and their needs. But that will bring closeness in our marriage, the kind of intimacy we really desire, paying attention. Let's go on to another one. What is this, number six, seven? A, B, C, D, E, F. Six. Letter F, comfort. There's a need, if we want to have an intimate marriage, for comfort. Another word for comfort is empathy. Comfort means to come alongside with words or feelings or touches to give consolation and tenderness. To give consolation and tenderness. To console one another. Romans chapter 12. I have a very clear memory of one situation that my wife probably does not, maybe not even remember. I'll embarrass her in this situation. I remember as a young ministerial trainee wondering how we were going to survive on the money we were being paid at the time. I had a new family starting, two children, very little children at the time. And we lived in a half of an old farmhouse in western Massachusetts, taking care of the Springfield, Massachusetts church at the time, and kind of wondering how we're going to pay all these bills in the car and get the family started and all the things that are going on. And we were renting from a 93-year-old gentleman who lived in the farmhouse across the street in this rural area. It was a very nice setting for us and for the kids. But I remember worrying so much about how we're going to take care of things, how we're going to make sure all the ends meet and take care of things like that. And the 93-year-old man was delightful to us. He and his wife were very, very kind and loved us, loved our children. His son, who administered the property we rented, was not as kind an individual. And he came over one day and said he was going to raise the rent by X number of dollars. And I remember just being kind of crushed by this. Like, how are we going to do this? How are we going to take care of this? And, you know, the weight of caring for your family, for men, means a lot. It's an important issue. How are we going to do this? It's my responsibility. I remember being just devastated by that. Like, what are we going to do? Do we have to move? Do we have to find another place? How are we going to do this? And I remember Pam coming around and putting her arm around me and just consoling. I know it's going to work out. I don't know how, but it'll be fine. What a touching moment that was. To this day, I remember that so clearly. To come alongside with word or feeling or touch that gives consolation and tenderness. It's a wonderful thing in marriage. Here in Romans chapter 12, in verse 15, it all, by the way, did work out just fine. We were able to negotiate a lower increase, and God provided and took care of things, and it was wonderful. But what a touching moment that was in our family. Romans chapter 12 and verse 15. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Obviously, we do that. This is a Christian principle. But this certainly is a principle within marriage. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Nowhere is this more important than in our own family with our own spouse. When they know that they are on our side, that they're there for us, that we are there for them to comfort, to understand what they're going through. 2 Corinthians chapter 1. 2 Corinthians 1, in verses 3 and 4. Why is comfort and empathy such an important thing? Well, because God is a God of comfort. And sometimes Satan can get at us and cause us to feel that, well, our spouse doesn't really know what I'm going through, what I'm doing for them. And they may have a time of need, and we'll answer with something like, oh, you think you're having a rough time? You know what I'm going through? You know what I do for this family? You know what I do for you? All of a sudden, whoa, this is way. All of a sudden, it's a destructive thing instead of a helpful thing. 2 Corinthians 1 and verse 3 and 4. Blessed be God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and the God of all comfort, who comforts us. Again, that word comfort means to go alongside, to help. Who comforts us in all our tribulation, that we may be able to comfort those who are in any trouble with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. So it's very important to show empathy for what our spouse goes through or is going through. And there will be times when you feel you need comfort and empathy. And you'll find that your spouse does also. Well, look, it's my turn to be comforted. No, it's time to sacrifice, to give. Give comfort and empathy. And more likely than not, it will return at the appropriate time. It can be very comforting to actually give comfort to our spouse. Let's go on to another. Letter G, or number 7, encouragement. To have a truly close marriage, there needs to be a great deal of encouragement. Encouragement might be defined this way: to urge forward and positively persuade toward a goal. The attaboy, you can do it. Attagirl, you can do it. I know you can. I'm there with you. And again, you get the sense of when that happens through country music songs. When the pickup truck is broken down, the dog is sick, I got fired from my job, but baby, I got you. And we're going to get through this somehow, right? There's that, okay, we're going to make this work. We're going to get through this. Encouragement. 1 Thessalonians 5. 1 Thessalonians 5 in verse 11. Be a Christian to your spouse, not a heathen to your honey. This is a Christian principle here. But how important is this in our family, in our marriage, between husband and wife? 1 Thessalonians 5 in verse 11. Therefore, comfort each other. Oh, we just talked about comfort. And Well, not just comfort, but and edify one another, just as you also are doing. In other words, keep it up. You're doing a good job of edifying each other. The word edify literally in the Greek means to build a house, to erect a building. So when we talk about edifying another, our spouse, we're giving them strength and courage. Just like building a house, it requires work from the ground up. Encouraging our spouse requires work from the ground up. And in case you hadn't noticed, rarely, if ever, and I would usually say never, but they say never, so I would say rarely, can we shame our spouse into correct action. Sometimes people think they can shame their children into the church. If I just make them feel bad enough, they'll know. You can't shame your spouse into correct action. What that will do is simply harm the relationship, and it will void intimacy and chase away the very thing that you wanted along the way, that kind of closeness. So we rather should strive to inspire them to right action, build them up to their very best. That's the ideal. That's what we hope. Continue in Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10 in verse 24. We most often read verse 25 here as a reminder that we must assemble together. And again, the internet is a nice option when we're sick, when we can't be here, but it should never be a substitute for assembling together. So we usually read verse 25, don't forsake the assembling ourselves together as a manner of some is. But verse 24 is where we'll focus, right before that. It says this, let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works. Our spouse needs encouragement. I like the way the New English Translation renders verse 24. And let us take thought of how to spur one another on to love and good works. Let us think this through a bit. Many times life tackles us, and we get so involved in life that we don't take time to think about how can I encourage my spouse? How can I help them? Can I spur them on? Stir up love and good works. New Living Translation says it this way. Let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. So rather than sitting back and say, well, my spouse never wants to go help anybody. Well, let's come up with a plan. Sweetheart, next Tuesday, Mrs. Smith needs a ride to the doctor. I volunteered to do that. You think we could work that out? Maybe could you help me with that? In fact, if I couldn't go, could you take care of that? Can we spur each other, stir up love and good works and kindnesses? Can we do that? Can we encourage, can we build courage into our spouse? Again, encouraging them to do the very best. Let's go on to letter H, number 8, respect. Respect. To have a truly close marriage, not just encouragement is necessary, but respect. One way to define respect is this, to value and regard highly. To value and regard highly. To convey great worth. If you were to say, I really respect that person, does that convey that you value them, that they're worth something to you? When we respect each other in marriage, wow, what an effect that has. When they know they are highly regarded, that they are valued, that they are of great worth to us. Romans chapter 12 and verse 10. Wouldn't that bring a closeness? Wow, I feel great when I know my spouse respects me. highly values me, considers me of great worth. It seems to have pretty much passed, as far as the colloquialism that I always thought was, I would talk about this, how disrespectful it always seemed to us. I don't think it was being used disrespectfully. It wasn't intended as a disrespect, but it always struck us as just so disrespectful when a husband would talk about the wife. Well, the wife said, like, does the wife have a name? Does the wife have any value? Well, the wife, she's back home taking care of things. The wife. I don't think that's used very often anymore, but a generation gone by, a lot of, the wife. Well, okay, she has a name. She has value. She has worth. And again, I don't think it was meant disrespectfully, but it always kind of came across that way to us. Romans chapter 12 and verse 10. How much is this needful in our marriages? Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor, giving preference to one another. One way to say respect is, in essence, to say honor. Does our spouse feel honored? The New International Version says it this way in verse 10. Be devoted to one another in love. I love that phrase. Be devoted to one another. Talk about respect and honor, devotion. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Putting them first shows honor, shows respect. The English Standard Version says it this way. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Be a great contest to have. I bet I can honor you more than you can honor me. Bet I can. Anything you can do, I do better. What a great contest that would be. Let's see if we can show honor to each other. See who can outdo each other. The New Living Translation says it this way. Love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. Take delight in honoring each other. What a great thing that can be within marriage. And we've talked before about when a husband feels respected or honored, in his mind, that equals love. That equals love. Respect and honor. Let's go on to another, because we got a few more before 5 minutes is up. Two more. Security. Security is a need of intimacy within marriage. Security means what? Confidence of harmony in relationships. In other words, I'm safe, free from harm. I'm safe with you. I feel safe with you. I like Proverbs 31, verse 11 in this regard. Proverbs 31, as you know, discusses, what do we say in the 50s, discusses our dream lover. Dream lover, where are you? Remember the song? Okay, some of you remember that. I want my dream lover because I don't want to dream alone. Does that ring a bell? Yeah. Okay, it's coming back. Please don't sing. Proverbs 31, the Proverbs 31 woman, kind of the ideal, the perfect woman, we might say. Proverbs 31, verse 11, simply says this about her. The heart of her husband safely trusts her. He trusts her. I was talking to a friend recently who was not a part of God's church, who was crying because the woman in his life betrayed him and was sleeping around with somebody else. It's funny how some of the times when people find out you're a pastor, all of a sudden kind of their whole life story comes out in 30 seconds sometimes. And that's, oh, it's okay. But the poor, you just felt so bad for the poor fellow. I don't know what other circumstances obviously were involved and what went on and all these goings on, but to be betrayed in that way was just so painful for him, and understandably so. Very opposite of what's spoken here. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he'll have no lack of gain. The Holman Bible translates it this way. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will not lack anything good. When you know you can trust your spouse, there's a security there. Many, many times, fellas, upsets in our wives' hearts are because of the security issue. I don't feel safe. I don't feel stable. I'm worried. I'm upset. Concerned. Notice Malachi chapter 2. We would certainly say that the heart of a wife should certainly be able to trust in her husband as well. Last book of the Old Testament, Malachi chapter 2. We'll read beginning in verse 13. God here talks about treating the wife of our youth in a certain manner. Our spouse should feel safe with us. That doesn't mean we have to have lots of money, but they have to know that we love them, that we'll care for them, that we'll do all we can for them. And everything will be fine. With God on our side, God leading and guiding and protecting and providing for us, everything will be fine. Malachi chapter 2 and verse 13, "And this is the second thing you do," God says. "You cover the altar of the Lord with tears, with weeping and crying." God's laying out a couple things he's upset with Israel about. This is one of the things you do. You come before me with crying and tears, so he does not regard the offering anymore. "Well, look, God, why aren't you taking care of us? Why aren't you accepting our offering? You don't receive it with goodwill from your hands. Yet you say, why? For what reason? Because the Lord's been witness between you and the wife of your youth." Why wasn't God blessing them? Because they were not upholding marriage. They were not faithful to their promises. You see, you promised when you were married. You made a promise. "I will." And you fill in the blank. You know what that promise was. You stood before God, if you were married in the church, and you said, "I'll do this. I will. I will always do this till the day I die. It's my promise." So God's saying, "You're wondering why I'm not accepting your offering? You're not following through on the promise to your wife, the wife of your youth. The Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, with whom you have dealt treacherously. Yet she is your companion and your wife by covenant. You're not treating her properly," is the point. Verse 15, "Did he not make them one? You're supposed to be one, and you're treating her or him incorrectly. Having a remnant of the Spirit, and why one? He seeks godly offspring. Therefore, take heed to your spirit, and let none deal treacherously with the wife of his youth." I always used to tease with Mr. Welty. He said, "My father always told me, when it comes to marriage, the first 10 years are the hardest." First 10 years? I was a newly married man at the time. "Oh, okay, only got 9.5 to go. We'll be all set." Well, it was a tease. But nonetheless, many issues in marriage are because we don't value that covenant. We made a promise to God, not to our spouse. The promise to our spouse was secondary. The promise to God was primary. So we promise God that in spite of our spouse's shortcomings, we would be faithful. And they feel safe as a result. Yeah, sometimes we're mad at each other. Sometimes we're upset with one another. Sometimes we're disappointed with one another. But there's never an issue of safety or security. It's never like, "Well, they'll dump me because they're mad at me." Never. There's a safety there. So to have a truly intimate marriage, they have to know, "I will never leave you or forsake you." That's what the promise is. Christ said to us, marriage is supposed to picture that relationship, so that's our approach as well. So many issues for our ladies run the issue of security. Last but not least, support. Support. Now you might have others that you would clearly add to this list, but this is plenty for today. Support. Support means to gently help carry the load. To come alongside and gently help carry the load. We support one another. Galatians chapter 6 in verse 2, to be really close to our spouse, to have the kind of closeness and intimacy we really desire, they have to know that we will always help. We'll always be there to help carry the load. And of course, we expect that they will be there to help carry our load as well. We are in this together. When our daughter was a little girl, I think it was about the time the movie The Little Mermaid came out. And one of the phrases, I remember Melissa being so tickled at this one phrase in the movie, which we won't go to, but nonetheless, the sea witch is talking to this girl who's infatuated with this human boy, and she says, "You'll be together forever." She has this wicked laugh, like it's this terrible thing because she's taking advantage of this poor girl. Together forever. We will always be there for each other. Is there any way to feel closer to someone? Galatians 6, verse 2. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. To know you are on the same team, you're working side by side to build the family, to serve others, to prepare for the future is extremely fulfilling. And it brings two into one, which is what God desires for marriage. There'll be times when you might feel you are doing most or all the supporting of your spouse, and they are doing little. And that may be an actual fact, or it may be only a perception. But support we must anyway. I'd like to close with an edited version of a poem titled Anyway. I've taken a lot of parts out because they didn't apply, but I've put in a few that might strike a chord. My spouse is often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive him or her anyway. When I am kind, I might be accused of selfish, ulterior motives. I must be kind to my spouse anyway. The good I do to my spouse today will often be forgotten tomorrow. Do good to my spouse anyway. Give my spouse the best I have, and it may never be enough. Give my spouse the best I have anyway. You see, in the final analysis, it's between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. Isn't that true? So, brethren, for us to have a truly intimate marriage, let's examine these areas of intimacy and do our best to carry out the actions that develop these very things. Lasting closeness in our marriages. We will find the results very rewarding and enjoyable as we continue to build a great and godly marriage.